Thank you.
Hopefully in a few more years, I'll be the expert Zoom guy. But I'm sending emails out, trying, you know, and never mind. It's funny. It's just funny. Okay. So looking at the agenda items today that we have here, I'm going to be real quick with the last 2 or 3 weeks since we last met. Commission has been really focused on the oversight coordinator. So we may not have much to talk about on the other areas, but we will talk about them and discuss them where we are. With that being said, I will accept any public testimonies at this time on the agenda items. Here's Ted. Just raise your hand if you have anything. Go ahead, Kat.
I have been receiving letters from people who are in solitary in Saguaro. I am really concerned. They seem to be violating the Eighth Amendment left and right. When somebody goes to solitary, they remove the mattress at about 6 or 7 in the morning and may return it at 10 at night. And the guys have been laying on the concrete floor. It's just inhumane. So that's a big problem. The next short one is in Halava, there's been a problem with the mail. And I don't know if it's a staff shortage or what, but I'm hearing from families saying, oh, my son was waiting for a letter from the treatment program and he hasn't gotten mail for a long time. So if you could check that, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat.
Good morning.
Hi, Angie. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, just a couple things. The mail has been an issue at Waiava also. I wanted to bring up the status of work furlough and the extended furlough. I don't know where that is at. Whether there are any reports from the findings on the prison visits on the COVID compliance. And also the phone call rates have gone astronomically high. They put out some laptops to do video visits, but they have not yet opened them. So it has drastically affected the morale in there because the communication is very, very limited with phone calls of a few minutes costing more than $4.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just looking for hands or anything else. If not, we'll move forward. Thank you for those concerns, ladies and gentlemen. When we look at the next item on the agenda, which you can find on the Attorney General's website under the Commission's link, the update on the hiring of the Oversight Coordinator. I'm happy to report that we have selected 3 names after our interview process. So in the last 3 weeks, we reviewed the applications. We selected 5 individuals, 6 individuals to interview, and we were narrowed it down to 3 names that we are recommending to the governor at this time. So at this time, we are in the process of creating the packet that will go into the governor's office. So that is as much as we can report at this time. We are confident that any one of those 3 names would be a good candidate for an oversight coordinator. And the decision now is up to the governor. And we will see to that we monitor that progress once it gets to the executive branch. Commissioners, any questions or additions? No. Okay. That's for the community to know that we're very happy.
Mark, before we move on, I have actually a question for Lisa, if Lisa's on.
Yes.
Will the Attorney General do some background checks before it goes to the governor?
Yes.
This goes to the, okay. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, everyone. Lisa, I'm just hesitant right now because I'm questioning, is this the normal pre-application screening investigation type of thing? Or is this just a brief? I'm saying this because I know that sometimes that those can be lengthy as well.
And it depends on how much you put, Martha?
If it's only going to be one of the three that's going to be selected, why would it not just be that person to be reviewed?
Yeah, this would just be a brief scan, a brief vetting of each candidate. We don't want to waste the governor's time, certainly, if there's something obvious that we should have caught early, but we're not going to hold up the letter or the submission for anything lengthy. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to submit by the end of the week.
Okay, thank you. That answered my question, Lisa. I appreciate it. Good morning, Max. Are you there? Yeah. And morning, Tommy.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Yeah. Good, good.
Mark, is it okay that I ask the commission a question regarding the selection of your coordinator?
Yes.
Are the names open to the public who will be selected? Because I know you folks said that you will take written testimony, but no, you know, it was closed. It was an executive session, but it would be difficult to see, you know, how we would provide testimony if we didn't know who these applicants were.
That's a question to Lisa. Lisa?
Yeah.
I have to double check that, but I believe if the court commission wants to, because we already have the three applicants, we're two finalists, so to speak, we're submitting to the governor. With notice, we can give, we can disclose those names.
The second question would be, if we disclose those names, should we be disclosing their resumes also? You know, so
I don't
know who they are, rather than just names.
That is something that I think we need to discuss with the candidates. Some people may be comfortable doing that. Okay. Other people may just simply want, I mean, there's a lot of personal information on the resumes as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
I certainly don't want to surprise anybody by publishing something that they didn't expect to be published. But.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. As far as updates for COVID, currently we're experiencing one active case at Oahu Community Correctional Center. I was advised that this inmate, upon admission, was detected to be positive. All other facilities, including our facility, is presently clear of active COVID cases. All PSD staff have been cleared of COVID cases as of right now.
Actually, are you aware of any, or are there any anyone in the hospital at this time as COVID related?
We don't have any inmates hospitalized right now as regarding COVID.
All right. Any questions towards Max or Tommy on COVID? 19. Commissioners?
It's my usual question, Max, and forgive me, is I understand the medical exception. Is the religious or spiritual exception still being discussed, or is that on or off the board?
For inmates or staff?
For either.
We don't have a mandate for vaccines for inmates. The parole board, you know, has their own rules regarding vaccinations for being released on parole. But for inmates right now, we don't have a vaccine mandate. For staff, religious and medical reasons are always exceptions that, you know, they can go to our civil rights office to file an exemption.
Because I know some pastors and spiritual counselors do not allow a religious exemption. And I've been working with other groups on this in the community, and I think it's a live question nationally and locally. I'm just FYI, I'm not grumbling, but I'm just raising the issue.
Thank you, Judge.
So, Max, you know, we've been hearing on the news that, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, 60% of the state has been vaccinated, and they're still pushing for more vaccinations in order to help resolve the COVID issues or the pandemic issues, changing it from a pandemic to an endemic. There's been measurements in the...
Sherrod, can you save it?
Excuse me, can you folks mute your... Thank you. Can there be anything with you folks and Department of Health in regards to the success of the vaccination program with your staff at this point?
We have numbers for our staff as far as ones that are fully vaccinated. And I think our most recent numbers, and these are staff, our most recent numbers are we're close to 86% fully vaccinated for staff. And this excludes the staff that have been on extended leave, such as military leave or workman's comp issues. But active staff that participate in their daily duties, we are approximately 86%.
And that's a statewide number, yeah?
That's a statewide number, and it's not just for correctional facilities, it's public safety overall.
Okay.
Max,
we do have a question. Can we be updated on how successful the vaccination incentive program is?
We're working on a point in time study, because that's the only way. Well, the number of vaccinations that were administered since we did the incentive. So we're collecting that data now. A point in time will not give us that number because the jails keep, you know, taking in new people and releasing more people. Yeah. But, you know, we could have, and the percentage for the jails also fluctuate because of that. But, you know, we're going to see if we can get a cumulative number from the time that we initiated and provide that data next month.
Next month. Okay, thank you.
Max, though, have you noticed any uptick in the number of vaccinations since you implemented the incentive program?
I would like to say yes, Ted, but you know, I cannot say how much. We've had vaccination clinics, and we've had, you know, sign up sheets with, you know, over 100 inmates. Unfortunately, not all of them showed up on the day that the shot was offered. But I would think, from what I saw, I think that, you know, there was some incentive to get vaccinated based on the monetary award.
I want to go back, Mark, and ask a question about the staff vaccinations.
Go ahead, Ted.
Okay. Max, do you have, are you able to isolate the data on staff vaccinations in correctional facilities? Not the rest of the department, not administration, law enforcement, but just the correctional facilities.
We probably could go in and separate that data if you know, you're interested in that.
Yeah, I think it's an important piece of data, because the facilities themselves are where the concern, the major concern is, because of the exposure to the inmate population and vice versa.
Sure. I'll try to present the next one.
Thank you.
Any other questions on COVID for Max at this time? Thank you, Max, for that update. Really appreciate the work that you and your staff are doing the system-wide.
Thank you.
Moving on to the next item on the reentry programs at the Department of Public Safety. Tommy, I did get that email that you sent to us. We weren't really able to follow up at that time since we were really focused on the interviews and application process. But I do want to know that we did get that email, and we're going to be working on providing more detailed information on what we need in terms of the reentry programs. Okay. But with that being said, and if any of the commissioners have any question, there was a question raised today about work furlough and extended furlough. Are we seeing a movement in those programs?
I just emailed a couple of things. One, we've had a number of inquiries from Ms. McFarland and from Kat Brady. I've responded to both. So in short, we're expanding the extended furlough program. I've instructed the Intake Service Center Division Administrator to purchase more bracelets, so anklets. And we put people in positions, the inmates in positions where we can put them out as providing they qualify. So we're starting to work on that now. That's why you see a lot of inmates stacked at OCCC and at the OCCC, because we're looking at those that qualify, placing them out on extended furlough. We're looking at how do we open the regular work furlough program. The concern we have is that the community positivity rate fluctuates wildly. And we have concerns with the inmates bringing it back into the facility, even though they may be vaccinated, because we have a number of staff that are not vaccinated, and we have a number of inmates that have chosen not to get vaccinated as well. So we're looking at how do we keep those cohorts together, housing them if we do open up. If we do, we would open it up as a pilot project, for lack of a better term, in the community that had the least amount of community spread. That would not be Kauai at this point. It would probably be Maui. But we're not at that point yet, but we are looking at how we can safely reopen the work furlough program. So if the commission has some suggestions, I've already contacted NIC, National Institute of Corrections, to see what the other jurisdictions around the country are doing. I would appreciate it if the commission has some suggestions. Mark, if you can get those to us, we'll take a look at them and see. We're looking at all feasible options on the table at this point.
Your work furlough programs, just to update my understanding, is it only at OCCC, or is it from Wayava and the women's facility as well?
No, we only have work furlough programs at the Triple C's.
Okay.
So we have it at the Women's Community Correctional Facility, Oahu Community Correctional Facility, Maui Community Correctional Facility, Hawaii Community Correctional Facility, and Kauai Community Correctional Facility. The prisons do not have work furlough programs.
Okay. And then those work furloughs, when we talk about work furlough, we're talking about what's managed from within those facilities, as well as the partnerships in the community?
To some degree, yes. But what we're really concentrating now on is the extended furlough option. Okay. Because what that does is that puts the inmate in the community, providing otherwise qualified, they will test periodically. And when they come back to drug tests in the facilities, they're kept away from the inmate population so that we negate the chance of any virus coming in. The people that see them for case management and drug testing will be fully PPD'd up, wearing the mask, the gown, the whole bit. So that's what we're doing now. And we're looking at expanding that now to get more inmates out that qualify. I think I sent Kat Brady some information as to where we stand with the numbers. I don't have it in front of me. I apologize. I didn't know it was going to come up. And we had some people getting ready to go out, which will go on, I think, next week. We have like 7 or 9 more ready to go, I think. Right now, all the Triple C's have people out on extended furlough.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
You have to put it in chat box.
Put it in the chat, Angie, please.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Tommy, I'm trying to update. When we're talking about furlough, we're talking about sentenced felons, or does this include sentenced misdemeanors as well?
No, this is only sentenced felons.
Okay. then I guess my last question would be, and we're still considering work furlough candidates as minimum or community-based status in terms of their classification?
All community, they have to be all community custody status minimum, okay, to go on a furlough.
All right. No further questions from the commissioners. I don't see any questions in the chat room. We can move on to the next item. Thank you, Tommy. We'll get back with you on the more specifics request.
Sure.
Hey, Mark, I have one. Tommy, is parole, do you need parole at the table here, or is that working pretty smoothly with Fred?
Well, it's working pretty smoothly, but I think what the commission and the should know is that HPA is a separate entity. So their requirements for someone to be released on parole are their requirements. So like they have a requirement for the person to be either vaccinated or have some type of waiver, medical or religious waiver. All we can do is encourage the inmates that want to be paroled to comply with the requirement if they wish to be paroled by the HPA.
Yeah, we certainly know that, and obviously I was with him for 8 years, but I'd like that to be smooth and smoother. So
we work closely with Mike, and I'll give you an example. Before we put somebody on extended furlough, because HPA has to eventually approve the residence for them to be released on parole, we have them review the residence and approve the residence as well, so that when a person does come off of parole, that's one less hurdle they have to jump over because HPA has already approved the resident. So we work closely with them on a number of fronts.
Good. I'd like to hear that it's super smooth, not just smooth. Thank you.
We did get our question from Angie, and her question is, why is extended furlough not an option for Wayava when they are community status?
Because the prisons are not set up to have the furlough option, and they do not have the staff to do the monitoring required.
And so really, Angie, in response to that also, you don't want to have furlough inmates mixing with non-furloughed inmates because of contraband. And so if it's not possible to do that separation and provide the staff, it won't happen at the minimum facilities. Okay, thank you.
And just we want one more clarification. Wayava is still considered a minimum and community-based status classifications?
It's really a community-based facility. We do have minimums there. So it's a minimum security facility with some people with community classification, but let me make it clear. Those people with community classification are waiting to move down to work furlough. HPA can parole them from any facility, and they have routinely paroled people from the minimum and even from Halawa, for that matter, because they have a viable parole plan. So not everybody has to go through work furlough if they can demonstrate to HPA they have a viable parole plan.
I need some clarification on that, Tommy. Wayava and Kulani, are they still the place where minimum security inmates by classification should be placed?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you again, Max and Tommy. We're going to move on to item number 6 on the agenda. Expungement of criminal records. Martha, you want to go ahead and
Yes. Wait a minute. Let me just pull up my information again. I was introduced to a program called Clean Slate by Jen Wilbur. And Monica at ACLU is also working on this. Anyway, there are a couple of jurisdictions that are making it much easier to erase criminal arrest, and in some jurisdictions, I presume convictions also. And because we know that a big barrier for employment, housing, other things can be that you have had an arrest even if it was 20 years ago. And so I'm gonna ask whether Monica or Jen would feel comfortable with presenting more information on the Clean Slate initiative. I let them know I was gonna ask them.
I can start real quick and then Monica can jump in. There are 5 states so far that have passed Clean Slate legislation. And to my knowledge, there are 6 states that have introduced legislation and 10 more states studying. There are also 19 states that have some sort of automatic clearing of records. And Hawaii is actually not one of them. Pennsylvania was the first to basically auto seal different records for different subset of misdemeanors and felonies. And in the first year, they cleared 35 million cases, helping more than 1 million people in that state. Every state is a little bit different in what they classify, what they're actually sealing or not sealing. But I know that I've reached out to ACLU and we're going to work together and with some others and try to really hui together to figure out what the legislation will look like here. And it would, I think it would really help people in Hawaii with housing, jobs, and just moving forward in life. If we could pass something like this here. Monica, do you want to add anything?
No, I think that you covered a lot of it. I mean, I think that, you know, as a lot of people know, in 2019, we did an expungement clinic. In 2020, we released some videos trying to help people get expungements. In the state of Hawaii, there's for felonies, there's like 2 that maybe you can get expunged. So this is a big barrier for people and people who are leaving incarceration. That's one of the things that they name is how these records get in the way of their employment, which then causes recidivism, which causes incarceration numbers to stay up. So if we're serious about decarceration, this is something that we're really excited about. I'm trying to think of if there's anything else. We have a website. On our website, we have expungement videos if people want to take a look. And I know Connecticut and Delaware passed it. I think it was this year. And in those states, it was, I think, over 300,000 people in each one were going to get helped.
I think it's also for non-convictions. So people just have been arrested and nothing happens.
It's been my experience, and this is going back years, so it might have changed, that when I would do record reviews, very often people would have arrest for things and occasionally even charges, but there's no action for years afterwards. But also there has been no like official dismissal of the charges in the record that I can find. Another thing I noticed in our law, and I didn't realize this before, there are a number of convictions that the courts can expunge. And they relate to operating a vehicle after consuming measurable alcohol or whatever under the age of 21, sentencing of first-time drug offenders, and sentencing for first-time property offenders. And I bet we have a number of people who fall in those categories who are in the community, they're not in corrections, but their convictions that may be expunged may still be impacting them.
Well, sorry, I'll just add one thing. The clean slate legislation is kind of like an automatic thing. So people don't have to hire lawyers, file paperwork and things like that, that really are hindrance to them clearing their records. So that's
or
a big part of it.
Yeah. Pay a fee. It's $35 in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So Monica, my understanding is that the ACLU is considering submitting legislation to this effect.
Yes. I actually met with our legal fellow who's been working with our executive director on the legislation. so it's still getting drafted. They're still working on it. But yes, this is something that's big and been talking about it for about a year or two. And a lot of people are really excited about it. People were, you know, very impacted by this. So as soon as it's ready, I can definitely, you know, show it to people. We need to get input, community input, to see if we're on the right track. I'll be reaching out to probably many of you on this call.
Yeah, if I may comment, Mark.
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, yeah, this is a big issue, as we all know, that has been in existence for quite a few years. As it was pointed out, generally, the judiciary on the deferral pleas, drug cases, and any kind of property crimes, as Martha pointed out, the court defers pleas, and for legal conclusion, those are not convictions. But the question becomes, how do they get it off their records? And it's really been difficult. Even if they've not been convicted under the law, it shows up on their criminal records. The harder, at least those are in court. The harder ones, as it's been pointed out, is the ones that are arrested by the police, no charges. The report is referred to the prosecutor's office for a charging determination. The prosecutor does not bring charges or may bring charges through a penal summons, so there's no arrest. There's no indictment, so there's no arrest, but a penal summons, a complaint summons issued. The person is brought to court and the case is dismissed in court. So now there is an arrest record by the police, but the case has been dismissed. And so basically the defendant doesn't know anything about it until, you know, years later down the road, when he or she applies for a job, and just like any government or employer looks at the criminal history and sees arrest on the record. And basically, you know, arrest has some sort of stigma, even if there's no charge or there's no conviction. And so the easiest way, as Monica brought up, is basically a statute that would blanketly just expunge or seal these records. Arrest without, you know, you can define the felonies that you want to have the record sealed, you know, not all felonies, but this is going to take details to be worked out. But the easiest way is a blanket statute, because if you put a mechanism where after so many years, like now, the procedures, after so many years, after the deferral period, then the person can go back into court and ask for expungement or seal of the records. It takes money, it takes time, and certainly it's easier to have a blanket statute to address all this without going to court or petitioning your record be expunged.
Mark, may I comment?
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with everything I hear and with my colleague Ron and Monica and Jen. I taught criminal law a couple of years at UH, and we are overly felonized in Hawaii. Let me give you an example. A rob two, if somebody takes a Snickers bar and resists the, you know, the at times market, that can turn into a rob two. That is not a rob in most states. It may not even, it's minor. And then the UEMV, somebody goes into a car and takes a pair of sunglasses or a penny out of the ashtray. That is a UEMV that's a felony in Hawaii, but it could be what's called a wobbler in California. So we've grossly, overly felonized and criminalized, and then it haunts them forever. So it's the bola morte of, so I really support what, I don't know what the turnaround time is now anyway. We need to make it exactly what Ron is saying, or Jen. Jen, do you have a model statute?
Sorry. Every state's done a little bit different, and the time periods are a little bit different in every state, but I think generally it's between 7 and 10 years, 5 to 7 to 10 years, depending on for misdemeanor to felony.
Okay, sooner than better makes me happy, because this thing does affect you for a long time. Thank you.
Just submit in your search engine, Clean Slate Initiative, and that website will come up, and that has all that information, Mike.
I'm asking for a solution, a fast, quick, simple one. I don't want to get tortured by 14 different models. I'd come up with one good model and push it.
Well, ACLU right now is drafting something, and when they finish their draft, if they're going to submit it this year, Monica just said she'll share it with us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm in.
And Monica, as you know, the public defenders are interested in this. The legal aid attorneys are interested in this. And actually, you know, I sit on the Access to Justice Commission, and although it's basically looking at civil issues, this I see spills over in civil issues because it affects people's jobs and employment. So, you know, my comment is basically get as many people who are now working on this issue together to support your initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. This is so exciting to hear everybody's support. We
I think it ties in with what in the changes that we're trying to make in terms of the entire system, Monica. So we appreciate you, your folks' work, and Jen, your work in helping us take those baby steps as we move forward. So thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you, Martha, for bringing that to our attention and for the discussion, Ron and Mike. I just noticed we kind of skipped over item number four. Yeah. And that was me navigating this Zoom meeting. But really, like I said, we were kind of, it kind of reminded me of the initial months of 2020, February, March, April, when they suspended the Sunshine Law and the commission was meeting all the time. And we're getting a lot of things done. And so we were making the announcements that we were meeting in terms of the application process and the interviews. But some of the other stuff we were not really able to do. And just to remind you folks, it's hard for us to have discussions when it's not the third Thursday as a group. When we're not allowed to, as the commissioners. So we did want to, on this item number four, I did want to make clear, as there were emails trying to understand where the commission stands in terms of the new jail. And so the commissioners, I know I want to make this statement and get any kind of clarity from those of you on the commission who may not be clear yourself on where the commission stands. But in the conversations that we've had and the experiences that we've had as a group, we understand that OCCC needs to be replaced. Okay? It's an antiquated structure. Yeah. And when you look at Halava Correctional Facility, that's almost 34 years old. And if we trace, there's the reformed and renovated OCCC from the early 80s, which is older than Halava. And then there's parts of OCCC that's still there from the 40s. Yeah, which I believe is the old cell block is like from 1941.
The holding unit is from 1936.
1936, yeah. So we're really looking at an antiquated facility. Yeah, and so we had an understanding that needs to be replaced. Now, the second part of this statement is that we want oversight, or we want some kind of participation in the planning and design of the new jail and its relationship to the system that it will support. And that's where our discussions are heading in terms of our advocacy for the new jail. Now, you folks agree or disagree? Mark, this is the time to talk about
Mark,
it.
I want to clarify. I don't think the position is that the commission wants involvement or input so much as we believe that interested community members should have more involvement and input.
Well pointed.
As a commission, our primary concern has been about the size of the new facility. We're very concerned about the size.
Well, and I think the function, given that, the statute that puts it together talks about rehabilitation, restorative justice, and maybe a more horizontal campus rather than command and control. That's to me, it's a big issue. And later on, I'd love to hear from Bob Merce. He's writing something up on this again, and he should.
Ron, any comments? Much of when I'm always the one that's talking about the system, because we want to build something to assure that it works within the system, or else we're just building something that's going to be overcrowded again. Yeah, and that's my concern when I talk about the system, is to assure that as we're building something, we're managing the system to assure that it doesn't get to where it is now. Yeah. And what are those policies that need to be changed? What are those policies that need to be reviewed? That's why we're looking at bail reform, expungement of records, everything we can to assure a smooth flow, as well as the programming necessary to bring back these individuals back into the community. And so there is a jail aspect and there is a system aspect that as we as the commission with the community should be concerned about. So that's where we are. That's why we wanted to make sure and understand where we are in terms of questions from public safety on where we are so that we can continue these conversations and find the niche of where we're going to make a difference as we move forward, the process that is continuing as we speak. Yeah.
Now, Kat brought up in the chat about it needing to know who is actually at OCCC now, what's happening at OCCC, the type of inmates that are there, be able to do this analysis. And I would say, first of all, I'm sure that the consultants, Curtis Pulitzer et al., that they, to come up with their projections, they must have looked at that. So maybe there's some way we can get access to the data that they used. Because we don't have the ability to go in and do that analysis ourselves.
Yeah. And I know you're, that was the population forecast, yeah?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I think we were kind of, it was called the OCCC Population Forecast Pre-Final Report. Yeah. By Pulitzer Associates and OGARD, I believe.
Yeah.
They did talk about, what I liked about the report is that they did talk about if this is the size, you can reduce the numbers by if these things may happen, you know. So yeah. They actually added in the report things that could influence the bed capacity of a new jail.
Yeah, but for them to develop those numbers, they had to have dig deep into the data, which is not presented in their reports. Yeah. So maybe we can get more information on the dig deep into the data.
Yeah. Mark, and that goes to, I think, the essence of the need to get the community more involved as soon as possible. I think Pulitzer came up with the projections that based on initiatives that they knew about, they already knew about because it were public and probably introduced at the legislature. And what they said was, if these, and I believe they listed like three or four initiatives, if these initiatives were implemented, we could reduce the size by something like 240 beds. So that to me leaves a question in my mind: what else is there out there that we could propose to the legislature that will further impact the population at OCCC, and how much impact would they have, these new initiatives have? And I think the best source to understand what these initiatives could be is the community. And that's why I think the proposal that there be a community advisory board is still a sound one. Thanks.
Okay. Bob, you're coming up with a position paper. I don't want to jump the gun. Are you there, Bob? You agree with what's being said?
I agree with, I don't disagree with anything that's been said. It's just that the conversation so far has barely scratched the surface of what the problems are or what we can do to fix them. There are a lot of ideas in the community right now about how to reduce the jail population. A few of them would, you could start with, why did we ignored the recommendation of the HCR 134 task force that police officers should be able to issue citations in lieu of arrest for Class C felonies, or at least some Class C felonies? And you can start from the arrest period all the way through to bail reform. And at each step of the way, there are dozens of off-ramps that we could and should be using, but we're not. And so that is, like Ted said, is exactly where the community can come in and really contribute something significant. Because the worst way, and I won't go on to a long speech, but the worst way you can plan a jail is to do it like that Bogard and Associates did it, which I'm sure they were told to do, which is simply look at, you know, certain historical data and make projections into the future. What you need to do is look at the whole system, the role that the jail plays in the system, and you maintain the small population of the jail by making sure that you're managing the people coming into it, because you've got diversion programs all across the way. And that's what I'm writing about. It's, the paper is almost done. It's about 22 or 23 pages. And I'll share it with you as soon as I can get all the footnotes and so forth cleaned up. But thank you.
Thank you, Bob. That was pretty much our hope for this particular topic right now, because I know we can talk forever on this particular topic. The real question is, you know, how do we create the engagement opportunity? Yeah, that's what we're really talking about. And with that being said, it gives me a little bit more ideas in my head, I think, on how we can try and do that in conversations with public safety. Because right now I wouldn't be able to have that discussion with you right now, Max, because I don't know how that engagement would occur. Yeah, it's something that we have to think about. You've heard what was being said today, and when you can think of that at your point, from your perspective, and Tommy's, but a bridge needs to be made. Yeah, and we've had made some suggestions in terms of a committee and whatnot. I don't know if that answers everything. But we need to continue to think about this and discuss how this engagement is going to be. I'm really looking forward to the hopeful expedite movement on our oversight coordinator, because then that we can really get off the ball with that. This will be one of the main priorities when they start. But that's where I'm at this particular point in time. Any more comments on the subject?
I just want to add one more comment about the oversight for the public to know that there are two other positions that are created through this project, and one is a researcher, and the second is like a clerical support or some type of support staff. We're waiting for the coordinator to come on board before we select those positions. So there will be more than just one person in that office.
Okay. Yes, thank you for reminding us, Martha. With that being said, I'll take some final comments on the agenda items that we were speaking about today. Thank you, Bob, for your manao that you just shared. So I'm just looking for hands at this time. This has been a very quiet, go ahead, Kat. You're muted.
Mute.
You're still muted.
All right, now.
Yeah, now okay. We can hear you.
I wanted to thank ACLU and the Y, because the expungement thing is so, so vital. I was speaking with a woman who's a per diem judge in North Carolina. And when I talked to her about expungement, she said, oh my God, you have to hire an attorney. You have to, wow, people don't have the money to do that. We have one judge that does that. So that's just an idea, but thank you so much. There's much easier ways to do this. We make everything really hard, and we shouldn't. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. Okay, commissioners, that's pretty much our meeting for today. I want to thank you for all the work that you've done in terms of the interviews this past couple weeks. Hopefully we'll work with Lisa to push those names up to the governor's office. And for you folks and all of you here on the Zoom, I want to wish you folks a happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. Continue to be safe, you and your families, during this ongoing pandemic. And we'll see you on December 16th. Yes, December 16th is the third Thursday of December for our final meeting for 2021. So we'll talk to you folks soon. Aloha.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.